Hello, I am Dr. Rosina Bakari, your favorite empowerment expert. It is March. We are here to talk about the Healing Challenge 2022 topic of, I'll let Dr. Singleton tell you what the topic is. Anyway, I am glad to be here with you all today. Thank you for joining us each month. And I am going to let you say hello to my co-host, Dr. Stephanie Singleton.
Thank you, Dr. Bakari. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. It's always good to see all of you and just really have these conversations. Thank you so much for being here at the Healing Challenge 2022. If you have not signed up yet, the website is www.healingchallenge2022.com. So let's just get started because this is a big one. The topic is trust. Hello, trust. We all know that's a big one. So I know you, our avid followers, you already have your pen, your paper, your pad, whatever. Okay. And you are ready to get these nuggets today from Dr. Bakari on trust. Share, because somebody out there needs to hear this word today. Okay. Dr. Bakari, are we just going to jump right into this question? What is trust and where does mistrust come from?
Okay, what is trust and where does mistrust come from? That's almost the same question. So let me see if I can dive in here and bring some clarity to what we're talking about today. When there is trust, it is the absence of angst or anxiety about what the consequences or behavior toward you will be, or that it will be favorable toward you. So if I trust our relationship, I trust what you're going to do, then I'm not sitting waiting for the axe to fall. There's trust there. The reason that's so doggone important is because when I can relax, because I trust what's happening between us, or trust what the universe is bringing me, or trust in myself that I'm going to produce something, it frees me up for my mind to then focus on the task, to then focus on connecting with the person, to then focus on all the comforts that come with the circumstance or situation, as opposed to being on standby. So trust is important because it helps us to relax and get into the groove to do our business, whatever that business is, right? So it's broad, and hopefully today we'll get to talk about some of those broad aspects of trust, not just in our intimate relationships, but in how we perform our job and how we move about in the world. Some people don't go to the doctor because they don't have that level of trust, because they're in hyper arousal, believing that someone may not be doing things in their best interest, right? And so trust can affect all of our lives. So that's why it's so important to have this chapter about building relationships, even when we don't trust people. But really the goal is for us to come to an understanding of how we can go about building up trust, right? So where does trust come from? Trust happens, we kind of know when mistrust happens. We can all point to that point. We can all give you the story about how we've been let down, how someone didn't follow through, how someone tore a hole in our heart, right? How someone took money, how someone, so we all can pinpoint to why we don't trust people. But where's trust supposed to come from? What a lot of people don't realize is that trust is actually a developmental task. There comes a point in our lives where the main focus of our brain is to develop brain cells that lead us to trust ourselves. Because when we trust ourselves, extending that trust to other people is a lot easier, right? So what age do you think we're supposed to do that? Here's your test. Do you know, Dr. Singleton, what age are we supposed to develop trust?
Oh, okay. I'm just going to say 3.
Okay. Sort of. Actually, it's a lot earlier than that. It's a lot earlier than even 3 years old. Remember, human beings come into the world very vulnerable. Like, we are slow, maybe because we have these big complex brains, we presume. But most animals, for example, they can walk within days, if not hours, of coming out of their mother's womb. We don't do that as humans. So when you think about it, it takes a long time for us to become independent. We can't even, someone's pushing us in a cart or carrying us on their hip for a whole year, right? So that's a long time for us to develop independence. It takes us months and months to learn how to feed ourselves, that sort of stuff. And so we have to develop a trust in our environment that our needs are going to be met. So that happens very, very early coming out of the womb. We actually have some research, recent research, that's now suggesting that the most important weeks of our lives is only 2 weeks after birth. Like, what you do with the infant within 2 weeks after birth will determine how they see the world until someone tells them that's not how you should see the world, right? 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks is the most critical period of our human lives, right? About how we are getting our needs met. So there's a critical period. So that's one critical period. The other real critical period is because, okay, so here's what's happening. Let's say up until actually 2.5, by 3 years old, like, it's firmly established, right? Because what's happening is people in your environment are taking care of you. People cater to your needs. They think you're hungry, they feed you. When you learn, start learning to walk, you fall down, someone kisses your boo-boo and say, oh, get up and walk again. Or they pick you up and they carry you until you want to take that risk again. So we build trust by someone giving us soft landings. So when we make mistakes, we know they're not detrimental mistakes to us. Someone is there to minimize the negative effect of any mistake that we make. That is huge. Someone allows us to play with our independence at a very early age, right? And so you see kids say no, because that's one of the first words we learn when we speak, no, right? If you say no, and someone then either helps you renegotiate that no, or gently move you toward what you need to do despite your no, right? Then that's people operating in the world on your terms. This little powerless kid has all the power, right? If I have all the power as this little powerless kid, all I have to do then is focus on me. My brain is developing around my needs. My brain is developing with the sense that what's in my environment is going to take care of me. So there's a belief in an environment. There's a belief in those who surround me. That is critical to develop. Now, here's the thing. So that's how we develop trust very early on. Now, to the degree that we don't get that for whatever reason, we don't get that, we see a problem. We know that there's a difference in the emotional development, for example, of children who are put up for adoption. Oftentimes there's some stuff that they have to work through later because we know there's a natural absence of trust there, right? No matter how much their adopted parents love them, care for them, oftentimes there's still this sense of trust that they have to work through. We also know that, for example, what if there's a sick person in the home that has to be cared for? Maybe the mother that gave birth didn't come out of the hospital as well. So there's a number of scenarios where children up to 3 years old don't get the nurturing that they need or deserve. The worst, of course, is flagrant abuse, where there's just neglect. No one wants to give them that. Sometimes it's unintentional, where people, parents or the environment, resources are depleted because people are working all the time because there's five other children in the home that needs to be cared for. Sometimes there's economic situations. So for whatever reason, when that happens, Now we have a child who's not sure that somebody's going to feed them when they're hungry. They're not sure if mom is going to come in and take care of them and change their diaper. They're not sure. The environment now is not safe. They don't develop safety in this environment. So to the degree that they do not have the ability to develop safety in their environment, something happens. So instead of me, my little brain developing, focusing on me, it has to do this twist where it focuses on the environment. It has to now figure out the environment. The brain is a very complex thing. Remember, we are built for survival. Human beings will survive the worst of humanity, and we have, because our brains are that adaptable. The thing about the brain is that it will adapt to the good, the bad, and the ugly all the same way by normalizing it. Okay.
Wow. That answers a lot of questions just thinking about certain things in my life. I'm sorry, were you
right? So now I'm three, and it's normal for me to have to focus on the behavior of other people in the environment. I'm not developing internal trust. I'm developing the ability, the keen ability sometimes, to scan my environment so I can predict my best chance of surviving this situation, getting food tonight, getting my diaper changed, staying out of harm, not being yelled at, not being spanked. No, not using the word no. I learned that quickly. If you smack me in the mouth when I say no, right? But the ability to say no is essential as a child. It's essential. Some people can't say no as adults because they were never allowed to say no as children, right? And so these are important critical periods in which we begin to learn to develop that internal trust to the degree that we were not cared for in the way that developed that internal trust. We carry some of those struggles into adulthood.
So this is why so many people are just totally focused on what we call people pleasers or whatever, or people who don't want any type of confrontation or whatever. We're just always trying to navigate, okay, how can I be safe in this situation, so that the priority is not even trust. The priority is, can I survive, you know, these 10 minutes, yep, this hour, you know, this family visit, this whatever.
Yep, absolutely. So it becomes about survival. And so when the goal is survival, then that's contrary to developing trust, right? So you got to get out of survival mode in order to learn how to trust. Mm. Yeah, and you have to trust to get out of survival mode. So you see the cycle, right? Yeah.
Right.
It's like double dutch. Like, you got to get in there, right? You double dutch. Like, how do you get, it takes a lot of practice and skill and training to figure out how to get in there, so both of those ropes are going at the same time and you can stay in there and skip. That's trust relationships, right? Trust survival. Like, you're just jumping in between those as you develop that skill.
Mm. Ooh, that was a lot. I hope people were able to really get that in. You know, this is one that you're going to have to come back to, well, all of them, but I think trust is such a big, big, huge thing with so many people. This is one definitely you're going to have to come back and listen to again and again, because there was a lot of different levels there, Dr. Bukhari. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And it really is. It is a lot of levels, and it's a lot of leveling up when we really get into trust, because this is one of those things that I am emphatic about. It is so difficult to really learn trust without having some sense of going back and understanding when and where that trust was broken. I know we think it was the first time he broke our hearts. I know we think it was the first time she didn't show up or she didn't pay our bill and we had to pay our own way. I know we we put it back to those adult situations, but I can almost assure you it was something that was broken at some point, probably before you were even verbal or very or highly verbal or highly skilled in verbal expression.
Wow. Wow. So in those instances, we can see how people are definitely all about really protecting themselves, you know, and you can't, and you know, to be fair, you know, we all know you can't just go out here and just blindly trust everybody. So what is the difference between mistrust and protecting yourself?
Right. So it's about developing the trust, the internal trust, right? And taking a look at those situations and really coming to know yourself deeply. That's why the healing journey is so important, because we want to come to know ourselves deeply. When we know ourselves deeply, we can be much more honest about what our needs are, right? We become much more loving so that we're not constantly looking toward the external, because that's what we've been trained to do. We've been trained to keep looking at the external environment to get our needs met, because that never happened to us naturally, right? And so we were taught and told, no, you must focus on someone else to get your needs met, not focus on you. So we gotta course correct, right? In order to develop that, we have to go back and course correct if we want to stop protecting and start connecting and relating. You know, my favorite saying, every relationship is a relationship with yourself. So this is about going back and finding that relationship with ourselves, because we don't need to protect when we have boundaries. We don't need to focus on how am I going to protect. When you love yourself, you're not going to say yes when you mean no. You're not going to say no when you mean yes. You're not going to worry about someone loving you when you love yourself. You're not going to give away power when you have come to understand how to use your own power. But if no one ever allowed you to use your power, you've been powerless since the first time you said no, then you have constantly got to trust other people with your power, because you've been taught to extend that power to other people instead of using it yourself. So the more you learn to use your own power, the less protective you have to be. Your power will speak to you and speak for you.
You know, that's a scary place. That really is a scary place to be, you know, man, because I, you know, trust, I'm not going to lie, you know, trust is something that I still have some issues with, you know, at times. And a lot of times I overwhelm myself and I stress myself because I don't have the trust. Well, it's two things, right? For me, I don't have the trust that somebody's actually going to follow, right? Mm-hmm. Or if they do something, or if I ask them to do something, right? Depending on them, what are they going to want, right? And I'm not even talking about money or compensation, that I'm just talking about in terms of manipulation, you know, those type of things. Or are they going to want, you know, sex in between, you know, something, you know, what is it going, you know, what is it going to be? And so that it just spreads into, is not, it wasn't just my relationships, my intimate relationships, or, you know, or, and my relationship with my family, right? It was also, you know, whether it's at work, whether it's just out, you know, in public, at school, like, you know, whatever it is, you know, that whole thing is still playing out at times, right? Mm-hmm. About that. And the other part of that is sometimes when you grow up in dysfunction, you're used to that dysfunction, right? You're used to that drama, right? That's why, you know, I kind of understand drama queens, even though they kind of, annoy me. I understand it because that's what they grew up with. So that's normal, you know what I'm saying? And that's what they know how to do. And so I knew how to be around dysfunctional people, right? I knew how to navigate that. Not that it made me feel good, but it was familiar. So I knew how to navigate that. So once I wanted to step out and meet healthy, emotionally healthy people, that scared the heck out of me, right? Or if they, for some reason, was attracted to some part of me that was still kind of healthy or whatever, you know, I would really be sitting there like, what the hell this person want? Why you that was what my thing, they want something,
right?
And especially if it was a man, right? And because I think I talked about, you know, how I was molested as a child. So it's always like, what you want? And in my mind, and then I started to verbalize it at times, right? Like, okay, what is it that you really like about me? And what is it? Because if you want something, just say what it is so I can say yay or nay, and then we can get on with it, you know? And so that's my trust issue. Let me just put it like that. So it's not just with, you know, just in this one setting. It permeates every aspect of my life.
Absolutely.
It's scary to be around, to trust my own instincts. Like, how do I know that person is not crazy? Because I'm really good. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not talking about mental illness, that type of thing. I'm not trying to be that, but how do I know that person is really healthy? Because my goodness, I've been so good at just attracting and being around unhealthy people.
Absolutely, right. And so we have to become good pickers of relationships in the first place. And that's going to have a lot to do with what is it that we are grappling with internally. So as long as those insecurities as long as those insecurities are high, we're going to grapple with those issues, right? So that's why it's all about dealing with the internal. So when we talk about trust, we're really looking at consistency, reliability, and predictability. Who do we trust to be consistent, reliable, and predictable? So when we go back to being that two-year-old, that's what we need in order to develop that internal trust. Can we rely on this person all the time in a consistent way, right? Do they consistently show up, right? That's consistency. Do they consistently show up? Do they show up in the way that I want them to? Or are they consistently showing up and passing me off to someone else? My big sister, maybe, my big brother, maybe. So they're consistent, but they're not reliable. Like, they'll show up when I need something, but what they do tells me I still cannot rely on them, right? And so, and then the predictability. Predictability is huge. That's when the babies start developing their very keen sense, because if they cannot predict when they're going to be fed or predict that when they have a need, who's going to come fulfill that need, that makes it really difficult for the brain to develop the complexity it needs to secure these internal mechanisms that are related to trust. When you cannot predict something, that's a problem. And when you're a child, and certainly in your adult life, that's why you see all the time in these kids' shows, they're like, you must be able to predict. Like, you can't keep saying that and not showing up, because it really messes with the brain mechanisms that we need to develop trust. So when we're trying to rebuild trust, we have to open space in our lives for people to show those three areas to us: predictability, reliability, and consistency. And based on a person's ability to do that, that has something to do with how much space we can reasonably offer that. Here's the trick. Who do we have to offer it to first? Ourselves. We first have to give it to ourselves. So when we are wishy-washy with ourselves, we can't predict our own behavior. That then gets reflected in the environment. Well, you said that you were only going to do this, but you ended up doing that. Or sometimes you follow through on what you say you're going to do, but sometimes you don't. You end up reflecting people according to how you treat yourself. And sometimes we don't. So here, consistency, reliability, and predictability. How are you showing up in your own life in those ways? Sometimes those have been difficult to articulate because we're like, well, did he buy me a gift? Or did she take me to the store when she said, did she call on Sunday? And we're in there are these tangible things that we're looking at, but we really don't have a good grasp on what we're really looking for. Consistency, reliability, and predictability. How are you showing up in your own life in those ways? The more you show up in your own life in those ways, the better your internal antenna will be for whether or not other people are going to show up for you in those ways. You're still muted.
Thank you for that. Thank you, because something does resonate with me when you, and just, you know how you hear something, it's that, like, what they call that aha moment, like, oh, okay. Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. So having said this, this just goes right into the next question perfectly. Is it possible to restore trust? And how do you do that? I think you kind of hit on that. You just hit on that with how we develop through consistency, reliability, and predictability, right? So it can be restored, but like everything, that's a process.
Mm-hmm. Right. We can restore trust. And the first question would be, do you need to? So if you're talking about trust, now I'm talking about trust with people, right? Not so if I'm in a relationship, whether it's at work or at home, how do I restore trust? The first question is, do I want to or need to reestablish trust with this person, right? Because everybody who breaks our trust, we don't always need to backtrack and fix that by going about your way. I don't need to, I don't want to, this is ended, this is over. I'm not trying to do that. That's an option, you get to do that. And oftentimes that's the best thing to do, is move forward, not move back, right? But if we're going to reestablish trust, then it requires more communication, and it requires, here it is, bigger commitment to yourself. When you say, if you don't want to be home by midnight on weeknights because we're in a committed relationship, but you can't commit to me to be home by 11 o'clock or midnight on weeknights, even though we've discussed that that's vital to our relationship. And I said, if you can't hold that part of your commitment, I'm out of this relationship. When you say that, you must commit to yourself. If you say you're going to leave, leave. If you say that's a boundary, don't cross it. It's two things about boundaries. People say, I don't know how to create boundaries. Oftentimes people create boundaries. That's not really the problem. The problem is that they cross their own boundaries. It's not always that people cross your boundaries. When you create a boundary, you have to stay on the side of the boundary that you created. To the degree that you don't maintain trust within yourself, when you say you're going to do it, do it. When you say you're going to be there, be there. When you say you're going to leave, leave. Because those are the things that make you consistent, reliable, and predictable with yourself. So restoring trust is, first of all, restoring it with yourself. And then having that constant communication with this person that they should be able to trust you for your word. When you said you were going to go, make sure they can trust that you're going to go. Because here's the thing. As long as you are unpredictable with yourself, they will be unpredictable with you too. They don't know when you really mean it. They don't know when you really mean it. You know, I said I wasn't going to wait for you, hear you, but you waiting 20 minutes. You said that every week that you weren't going to wait for me. So I don't understand why you didn't wait for me today. You've been saying that for 20 weeks. Now today you're not going to wait for me, right? We train people how to treat us. So if it requires you to move on, to try again or reestablish, then most important, if you move on and then you develop the same patterns with someone else, then it doesn't matter. If you don't do that for me, I'm going to do it myself. I said, if you don't do that, right? Like, we just keep repeating it. Like, decide what your boundary is and trust yourself to hold that boundary. That means, and if you don't know what your boundary is because you haven't had that experience before, it's okay to state that. I'm not sure how I feel about this. That's okay to not be sure. Because then you're not going back on your word. You don't have to have the answers to every problem that comes your way today. What you do need to do, though, is be consistent, reliable, and predictable with yourself. Yeah, I'm really angry. I don't know what I'm going to do about it yet. I get to have some time to think about that. But once you say it, do it. And that's how you build rebuild trust, by rebuilding the trust within yourself and always allowing that to be reflected in your relationship with other people.
Wow. This has been a lot. And I hope everybody was able to take that in. Just press replay on this one and all of them, because it's not just about listening as well as doing the work. This is about doing the work. Make sure, if you don't have your book, if you don't have your book, The Healing Journey, get this book so you can follow along and you can do the work that's in here. Today, you gave us the whole background, Dr. Bakari, on how trust is developed or how mistrust is developed. You gave us the whole scientific, explanation and how it plays out in our lives on a daily basis. So everybody really take that in and do the work. Do the work. This is work, and we're doing this together. Go to www.healingchallenge2022. And let's just do this together. If you think you're just going to come and you're just going to listen and it's all going to be okay, no, this is work. And you got some work today too. Dr. Bakari said consistency, predictability, and reliability in your own life. Practice, people. We got some real nuggets today. I'm so glad you all joined us. Don't forget us in April, and don't forget to sign up. Don't forget to share these podcasts. I'm telling you, get together with a whole bunch of your girlfriends, get on the Healing Challenge and go over these books and send us your questions. Dr. Bakari, what are your last words for us?
I'm excited. This has been a great discussion. Thank you for that. Yes, we will entertain your questions. If you want to bring them in, we will address your questions on air or live. So just be in the journey. We have 9 months left of this journey. So be in the journey and let us know how we can support you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate you as well, Dr. Singleton. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Same here. Bye-bye.